Welcome, everybody, to this is actually episode 60 of a big number. It's pretty wild that we have all of these crazy entrepreneurs, founders that have been able to do 60 episodes while still.
I'll celebrate when we get to 69. That's when the real party starts.
But wanted to welcome Ronak here as our guest, and wanted to just give you a chance to introduce yourself, and also like how we even know each other, and like what your business does, and all of that great stuff.
Let's do it. I'm Ro, co-founder, CEO of Pietra. And before this, I worked at Uber way back in the day. Uber Pool was my claim to fame. So shout out to all the carpooling people. And Kevin, how do we meet? The honest truth is I met because I admire Airhouse. So I reached out and I'm like, man, this guy's building a company that I admire. So I need to talk to him and see how we can work together so I can learn from him. And that's kind of how it started, right? I was like, hey, let's chat. Oh my God, the wonderful world of e-commerce and logistics and manufacturing and all that fun stuff. You know, the world is smaller than you think. So we would have bumped into each other, you know, sooner or later.
No, I think actually I was pinged by like three or four other investors is like, you need to talk to Ro, and he's doing some amazing stuff. And then we got connected, and it's been great to get to know you and all that stuff. But one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on the podcast is that you are like myself and Sarah that are completely unfiltered. Like you tell the honest truth about like all of the the juice that like people
we're like, all gonna get canceled. We're not gonna make it to 69 episodes.
We're all getting canceled.
Before we get into the gossip, can you explain to me what Pietra does? Like I'm a kindergartner, because I'm not in the industry and I don't understand all the lingo of shipping and logistics.
Yeah, you know, like the explain to me like I'm five, right? That's said, so I can't use like
big five, words. Six.
Yeah. In the most simplest terms, we build the tools that allow people to run their e-commerce business. So sell products on the internet. And we help with, we're like the AWS for e-commerce, and we can help you with manufacturing and sourcing tools, an entire fulfillment and logistics operation we got going, so you can ship your products to your customers. And then we build a bunch of e-commerce software, whether it's storefront or marketing tools, to help you grow your brand. And the idea is it's one platform that you can go to start and scale an e-commerce business and do it from your laptop, from anywhere in the world, at just about any size of business, you can get value from the platform. So that's what we do.
Do you guys work with, just so for the audience knows, like, do you guys work with like super small brands starting them out, or do you work with like mid-market brands, or like how does that work?
Yeah, it's pretty wild when you build tools, you know, you see different types of people using those tools. And so we have people that are just, they come to Pietra and say, I have an idea for, you know, my own line of sunglasses. So like really at the idea stage, pre their first sale. And then we have multi-$100 million brands that use parts of Pietra as well.
Right.
And it really is this modular platform where, depending on what you need as a business, you can cherry pick the services and the software that you can either use or install on your website. And so the idea here is, you know, in the last 20 years or whatever, 15 years it was, where Shopify was a thing, the hard part was, how do you sell something online? Like if you have a hat, you want to sell it, like, how do you do that? Then people bought website builder, or people created a website builder like Shopify.
Right.
Now the hard part is not where are you going to sell it. You can sell it on your Shopify website or like Facebook Marketplace or TikTok Shopping or whatever. It's everything else that goes into running a business online that you need help with. And so we build, mm-hmm. we are helping people with that part of the business. So like everything that sits under your website.
Got it. Got it. So I've got a burning question from one of our last calls, that, I have to ask. Your board is, you have Keith, your boy, on your board. He is a very, I'd say on Twitter, he is very, I don't know what you want to call it, contrarian or loud mouth or whatever, but you also mentioned that he's like your best board member. Explain to me that like dichotomy there, and like it's like the personal persona that is like maybe different than, and I'm sure Sarah will also weigh in as well.
I'm team Keith Raboy. Like he's one of my favorite people on Twitter. I don't know that I love like Miami as much as he does, but I love that he's like passionate about stuff and fights for it. But I'm curious like how that dynamic does work on a board, because, you know, I think in my experience, I've wanted my board to be a little bit like, let me take the lead. And I wonder, you know, someone who is vocal and contrarian, you know, how that, I think he's probably a really smart guy and directionally correct about a lot of things besides Miami. The one thing he's wrong about, but everything else he's probably right about. So
he's definitely
works on a board.
Very wrong about Miami.
He's wrong about Miami, but he looks like good voice for a lot of other stuff.
Where are you located right now?
So we have an office at our headquarters, like our gravity center is New York. So we have an office right in Soho. It's pretty small. And then we were a pandemic company, essentially. So we do have a small team in Los Angeles. Our whole logistics operation is in North Carolina. So there's a fair bit of, fun travel.
So he's probably okay with that because it's not San Francisco, right?
Yeah. Well, I was in to be fair, I was in San Francisco working at Uber, living in the Mission, walking to work every day. And, you know, coming from Seattle where I worked previously, I would have to take a lot of detours on my 12-minute walk to the office of the Mission based on various factors of what's happening, whether it's people defecating on the street or like, you know.
Oh God. Yeah, we had an office in the Mission that we had to get rid of because there was too much defecation in front of the office.
That's like people who don't understand San Francisco, like, will say, think that's really weird. It's like a real weird thing. Like normal people, like in the morning, you have your cup of coffee, you get outside, you're like, nice deep breath of fresh air. That's not what it's like when you live deep Mission. It is like, all right, we're going outside now, guys. Like the N95s that were popularized through COVID, we were rocking that stuff way before. No, we weren't. Those are like utility accessories. But I think what he is right about for on that front is like, I'm now, and we can get into this. We started in a WeWork very early before the pandemic, and then we went remote and now we're back in person. And I think there is definitely something to being together that, and I've been trying to quantify this and articulate it with the company in like, you know, water cooler discussions, but there is something extremely positive that you get from being in person. And it's
completely
almost
agree.
To articulate. It's almost like, and the way I think about it is like, when you're remote and you're using these tools like Slack, it just takes a little bit more effort for everyone to make sure everyone's up to speed and, you know, getting, if you, in passing, you say something, and you're like, oh, we should get everyone up to speed. We just like kind of made this pseudo decision, especially in a small startup. And then what I noticed is an interesting like negative loop where I would know that if we made a decision, I would have to like spend time trying to figure out how to get everyone up to speed and all the context, and therefore make less of those decisions and therefore have less of those conversations. And it's like the burden of proof was on me on this side of Slack to be like, oh, like, should we have this like this, or should we just like wait a week and then have a big group discussion? So like, we don't have to like go back and forth on Slack. And interesting, totally like you don't notice it until after, where you're like, okay, I was making less decisions and I'm moving less quickly because I was like subliminally thinking about the tax associated with like educating everyone else. It's like a weird thing that I realized was happening. So anyways, he's right about, I think, about that.
He definitely is right about it. In my opinion, the in-person piece, like I'm now scaling up, our company, in the Bay Area. And like a third of our team is in the Bay and we get together, at least once a week. And like we solve so many problems when we're like actually in person. And so I personally think that he's wrong about Miami, because I think that that's not a central hub for talent. But I think he's right with the in-person piece. But also, one of the things I wanted to touch on, because I also got to spend with my last company, with Ship, we were either going to raise money from John Doerr, from Kleiner Perkins, or from Mark Andreessen, from E16Z. And I got to spend a lot of time with Mark, and like the behind the scenes, like I remember very, very well, like me and Mark spent like 3 hours at his like favorite like breakfast spot. I can't remember where it was. And but also like I would consider him like a little bit of a troll on Twitter, and also same with Keith. And so like what do you either both you Sarah or Ro, what do you guys think about that? Do you think that's like an attention grabber, and that they are actually really great people underneath?
I think like in my experience, I mean, there's no question that Keith's like a good person underneath. I think, at least from my experience, and I say this and I've said this before, and you know, hopefully he doesn't remind me of this too much, but I do think that his advice to me is the reason the company is as successful as it is during very critical moments of the company, where I know I probably would have, as someone who hasn't experienced that, I'm gone down the wrong path. And like, it's the things that, and so like, I'm very open about that. I remember the first time he sat me down, like the second time after I met him, and was like, why do you have a free platform? People need to pay for the product. And like, even just like little things like that, where I was like, oh yeah, it's just like, it's going to be easy, right? We'll just get a bunch of free users and then convert them to paid at the later date when you guys give us more money. And he's like, that's not how the world works, dude. Like, remember, you're running a business and people are going to pay you for the thing that you create. So those are like very tactical examples. But then I think the most important part of why I enjoy working with Keith and why he's so valuable to other founders is there are so few investors that are also operators. So when he gives me advice, you bet your ass I listen. Because guess what? It's not like back 4 years ago when I started this company or worked here, this is a growth hack that we did. It's like, I know the fundraising market as relevant as yesterday or whatever, right? Like, I know this is happening now. These types of problems are like 2024 problems. And so much of investor feedback is, or guidance or advice or whatever you want to call it, is like stuff that worked 3 years ago. And I'm like, you don't really realize that stuff that worked 3 years ago, like, generally won't work.
Or worse, like it's not, they've actually never been operators. Stuff that's never worked. And like, I think that's, you know, we have some of those kinds of investors too, and they can be great for a lot of things. Like they have their talents, but when they try to weigh in on, you know, product or operations or how to grow or scale, like that's where it all kind of falls apart, because like you just have no idea what this stuff takes or costs.
Totally. And like, it's funny, but I like to think that working with Keith, and Carter's also awesome, who's also on our board, and they have, you know, different personalities, but equally valuable. I think understanding how to work with founders and how to motivate them, Like there's certain, I played baseball growing up, you know, there's certain coaches that actually did impact the way I think about the world and the way I play baseball or whatever. And there's some coaches that were just ineffective, and the best coaches are the ones that can dial it in. Like he knows what to say to me to get me to act, you know, and maybe that pisses me off. Maybe that makes me happy. Maybe that nudges me in the right direction. And I think that's such a overlooked skill from an investor is like, how do you get the best out of me? And a lot of the times, I think if founders don't admit this, I don't know what I don't know. Like, you know, and so I'm not walking around thinking I have like a strong opinion about something that I know nothing about. Or if I do have a strong opinion, it could be completely wrong. And you really need someone who understands how to get the best out of you. And my favorite scene, I remember when he was switching to another company, he went to KV. I flew down, I was in his office and I was playing the final scene of Whiplash, like on the phone waiting for him to come in with like, and I was like, this is like what, this is how I would react to like a coach. Like I, it resonates with me. Like when you're trying to bring the best out in that last scene, he's trying to bring the best out of the drummer or whatever. And it's like super intense.
Right.
I view that as like a very positive coaching experience, not a negative one. And some people, you know, for whatever reason, they just don't respond to different ways of coaching. So they might think it's like wrong. But for him, working with him has been a godsend for the company. And again, I
cut
I
out.
Changed. Sorry?
You cut out there for a second.
Oh, I was going to say,
you working, cut out working, there.
Yeah, working with him has been like such a boost for the company. And I think his advice is very, you know, on point and relevant. And I think the relevant piece is what I think other founders should remember. Like when I came from Uber, and the reason it hits so close to home is when I came from Uber, it was very easy for people to give me advice, even my peers. And, you know, we did this and it worked.
We put
flyers in Miami and we got some drivers. And I'm like, cool. Like, I don't know if that's relevant to us or if that even works anymore. But like, I had one investor say I should take out a full page ad in the newspaper. So like, think how like relevant these things, some of these pieces of advice are, right? And how irrelevant they are. And I'm like, all right, thank you for your call. I can't believe I'm paying you, but okay.
I've done full like subway ads in New York that didn't work at all.
I think if my friend has one of the best quotes that like we were like, you know, over a couple of whiskeys we were talking. He's like, the thing about advice that you like read on tech Twitter or Quora, like wherever these first time founders, second time founders go, like it kind of
they
feels
to us.
Like
they come to us. They come to us now.
Well, it's like if you read what's on the forums or Twitter, it's kind of like all the advice cancels itself out. And like, so 50% of the blog posts that say that focus is the number one thing that you should do. And then the other 50% of blogs say that you have to maximize your surface area for luck by spreading your bets and picking the winner. It's like, okay, so now both of those cancel each other out. Which one? And like every piece of advice has that. Don't raise from a big firm. The number one indicator of success is raising from a big firm. You know, small board, big boards, you know, starting with a freemium product, pay right away. Everything cancels itself out if you really zoom out. And so what do you end up with? Everyone's on their own trajectory. Everyone has their own problems. You know, there's similarities of companies and differences, but ultimately you're going to have the problems. The problems are universal. The solutions are unique. And like, don't rely on Quora blog posts to like help you through the exact problem that you have. You know, it's going to be too general and too high level. And I need to know what to do now, not what worked at Uber in 2014.
Rely on this podcast.
Yeah.
Go to Sarah for intro calls. She is the intro specialist. No, my per hour rate is a lot higher than yours, Sarah. So unfortunately,
it's true.
I don't get as many bookings as you do.
You guys are all way smarter than me. I would never give advice. Are you kidding me? Then I'd be like, I have nothing to tell you. You should go wander. This is going to be hard. I remember one of the hardest weeks in the company's history. I walked into Keith's office and was like obviously so disheveled and sad. And he's like, I think his only response was, well, it's going to get harder than this. And I was like, oh, okay. I'll just leave now then. Yes. Like, this is not the hard part. And I was like, oh, it feels like I'm dying right now, but okay, I got it. I'll keep going.
How is your company doing? Like, what stage are you at? You know, however you measure that in terms of fundraising or in terms of profitability or however you think about where you want to go.
Yeah, good question. I think we're growing pretty well. I think it took a couple of years to really get this company off the ground. And And, you know, now we're growing and the team is growing and we're going global. We closed an awesome round with M13 last year, like late last year. And we have, you know, many years of runway. Growing our revenue, all of our business units are growing at a pretty healthy clip. And I think like the hardest part for this startup was everyone would always tell us, you know, things worth building are going to take some time and they're hard. And I think I was pumped with so much, you know, VC Kool-Aid, which is, it kind of messes with you a little bit because you're like, should we be building something that's like super fast and like, you know, shines bright hot? And then like, you know, you're like playing the fundraising game. Or do we really want to make sure that we're building a $10 billion company so they can go public, you know, so they can grow in the public markets? And that was a really difficult thing for, I think, our small team at the time to realize, which is, you know, we are a company that is taking on three massive industries at the same time. So people are right away when people meet us, they go like, you guys are crazy. And then you layer in like the VCs thinking we're crazy, which is like, who the hell is going to fund this crazy thing? And you're like, yeah, like, I guess it is kind of crazy. Like we're building an Alibaba and like an Amazon, you know, and like taking on the entire app ecosystem for e-commerce. And we're doing it all together. And there's like six people in a WeWork. And you're like, this is going to be like very difficult. So it took, I like to say, like, it felt like building a bridge where we knew we wanted to put tolls on the bridge. But you can't book cars over the bridge unless you build the actual bridge. So you'll never make the toll revenue if you don't finish the bridge.
We can't have any bridge references right now. I don't know if you saw what happened in Baltimore.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, that's something. That's outside of this podcast.
The bridge, like a ship hit it and the bridge completely collapsed. Like it is the most terrifying video I've ever watched. Just happened. Like I always wake up in the middle of the night and it was like 1 a.m. or something. Pacific.
Oh my
and
God.
It is like the ship basically like tapped it and the whole thing just crumbles down. Anyway, you can never drive on a bridge.
Analogy, like, which is like, you got to build the rocket to get into space before you put Starlink up.
Yeah, the better. Right?
I get it. I'm going to pay for Starlink at some point. I totally get that. But you got to build the rocket to get in, to put the stuff in space. So that's going to take some time and take some capital. And I think it took a lot, like a few years of really, really hard work with a small team. And like kudos to the team staying together, almost no attrition, which is kind of nuts to be like, everyone's building avatar companies. And we went through the creator economy and the TikTok boom and like Clubhouse. And you could see as a startup, like the six or eight of us in a room are like, oh my God, like this feels like we're building something that, yeah, we're saying can last 20, 50, 100 years. Cool. You know, the Bits and Atoms company, it's very difficult, but, you know, being disciplined enough to get to a point where we can now start doubling, tripling, you know, our revenues every year, that took some time. And now we're reaping the rewards of like, we have this amazing pyramid of our company, like the base of the pyramid is built. And now we're monetizing like really, really quickly, faster than ever before on top of it. But man, Kevin, we were joking around about this, which is like, I don't know who would, like, I don't know how this type of company could exist now, like given the current environment, right? Like it's taking on three industries at once, bundling it together like no one else has ever done with, and you know, it's very, very difficult to do. But then the flip side now that we see it working is you realize you have like a very, very strong structural advantage over other people.
Yeah,
we haven't really had any major competitors, direct competitors in years, and the fuse that we had has shut down in under like a year and a half.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really great like learning to share with all of our listeners. Like everybody that has been listening to this podcast has I've been in the hype cycle before. Like we were the Uber for shipping for my last company, and now it's all AI, and before it was all crypto, and like, that's not where like the real like companies get built. It's like over, like you have some sort of like insight into this like other industry that other people are not working on. I think actually in Keith, your boy has a pinned tweet. It's like you look at
Highly fragmented, low end, yes, industries.
Yes.
Vertically integrated, simple by the value prop. I know that tweet. That's the reason that I'm working with them.
Exactly.
It's so true.
So it's like you can't be following the crowd, and you need to have a unique perspective on something, and you need to be building something very unique. Otherwise, like, you're either going to get drowned out by competition, or you're not going to have a differentiated product or something like that. And that's also like why I'm building Airhouse. Like, mm-hmm. It's in a very like we're obviously in a very crowded space, but we're taking a very unique look at this. And I'd say the same thing with Sarah, building Winnie, as far as like the industry that she's in, and
definitely highly fragmented and low NPS. I got those parts.
Tell me a little about Winnie.
It is a childcare marketplace. So we help parents find daycare and preschool, and our customers are the daycares and preschools who use Winnie to, you know, reach parents to get parent interested in their programs and fill their open spaces. So very large, underestimated market. You know, $60 billion in the U.S. alone just spent on daycare, preschool, and that's not even the other forms of childcare. No one's happy with the childcare market. Providers are struggling, so definitely low NPS with these businesses. The vertically integrated part. I have to think about that.
It's your backyard. Yeah. Vertically integrated. I think this is a really fun kind of like tangent, but I'll definitely check out Winnie and share with the company. Is during the pandemic, one of our co-founders had his firstborn son, like his first child. And you want to talk about like true startup family. The company chose the name of his child. And so like, he's like, okay, well, I guess like, you know, this is New York. Yeah, this is like the wildest story. You know, like my business partner for life, Pan, essentially. He comes into the office, we're in a WeWork, there's five of us sitting at like one small desk, and he's like, all right, guys, you know, my wife's pregnant, and someone here is gonna name my firstborn son. Like, whoa, you got your wife to sign off on that? That seems very wild. And so we did a process of everyone submitting their names through a Google form, like kind of like as a joke, and then they actually picked one, they fell in love with one, and now Remy, little Remy is his name. And we're watching him every day throughout his life, essentially, because it's like,
oh,
like,
that's
send cute. A picture and put in the Slack, but like, you know, that tradition kind of comes on or keeps going. And Sarah, like, once they get into school age, I did not realize just like, I have a newfound, you know, empathy, or actually sympathy for parents, just like in general, trying to work. And then like, I didn't know like how your life changes with preschool, with just schooling in general. I didn't realize that you're always sick or the kid is always sick. And I'm like, what is going on?
I think daycare and preschool actually kind of gets a bad rap for kids getting sick. Like, the truth is that like kids are building their immune system. Their immune systems are not developed. And so, yes, of course, when they're young, they get sick a lot more frequently. And of course, when they're exposed to other kids and germs, those germs are going to travel. But that would actually happen kind of regardless of their situation, kind of the first time they're exposed to a lot of those germs. So sure, keep them in a bubble for the first 5 years of their life. But when they enter kindergarten, that's all going to happen then when they have to develop.
We actually did
that experiment over COVID and we saw it happen. Right. So I think, you know, I feel for families, and I feel this day to day, you know, when your kid gets sent home sick from childcare, it's never fun. And you're out of childcare for the day. That sucks too. But it's also like, it's a developmental thing. And every year in childcare, it gets better. Your kids get more robust. And like my kids who've been exposed to childcare from day one, basically, you know, they don't get sick very often in elementary school, which is a good thing because you don't want to miss that. That's, you're actually learning.
Right. I'm an idiot. Talk about controversial. I'm like a I'm an anti-bubble person. I'm like, yeah. I think like, yeah, they should be eating dirt when like,
me too.
Build that immunity, yeah. baby. Like, let's go.
Same.
It's yeah. I mean, I think we definitely did the experiment and we saw what happens when you do no germs at all. So you need some exposure. Definitely, you know, I understand parents don't want like hand, foot, and mouth disease or like those horrible things.
Yep.
I think there's a balance in a lot of daycares have to. Yeah.
I want to change topics.
You don't want to talk about hand, foot, and mouth disease, Kevin?
Well, I don't think that our listeners, well, maybe some of them want to hear about this. But what I actually, my next question for you, Ro, is like, you were involved in the upswing of Uber. I'm not sure. I know on your LinkedIn, you said that you were responsible for Uber Pool, which was obviously a massive success. I'm very curious, and also I think our listeners are like, what was it like to like build that product and scale that product, and also any interactions you had with Travis, who's obviously he now has he's got a show about him and all of that. I think any commentary around that would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I should say is like, you know, the Uber Pool team was pretty amazing. So all the credit kind of goes to all of us. It was, you know, in my life, the most like concentrated amount of knowledge that I've like ever like been around. But oh my God, like 2015 Uber Pool. When I joined the company, it was like, I like to say like peak, you know, peak San Francisco and peak Uber.
Yes.
And over that time period, I grew closer to Travis. Now we're friends. And I even worked at Cloud Kitchens after Uber for a little bit. That was fun. Yeah. And I think now looking back.
Also, quick question. Get Travis on this podcast, by the way.
Okay. I will. I think you're going to have a hard time getting him to come out and do a podcast, but we'll try. I'll hit him up after this and see if he's up for it. I think he'll have some pretty amazing stories that people will, you know, fall off their chair. I can only imagine. And I think, coming back to your question, in those early days of Uber Pool, I think, you know, I had just come from Microsoft, the world's slowest company. Maybe Boeing, like the world's slowest company, and then like is like second slowest.
I worked there.
At Microsoft or at Boeing?
Boeing.
Oh, so you're responsible for all these planes that are broken.
No, I did all the iPad development for them.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
But the funny part about kind of that transition, and I've talked about this to other people that work at these big tech companies, is we were really thrown into the fire at Uber, and there were so many smart people working on something that was obviously going to be big, or was being big in front of our eyes. And I think there's pros and cons to that. It was a very crazy, chaotic environment. I think I was lucky in getting, you know, kind of like that last great rideshare product that that was near and dear to the core team's heart, Travis's heart. He did a TED talk on it. And I think one of the things that I will always be in debt to him on is like really learning how to build a business from the ground up and think about the business in a way that you would just never get exposure to at like a big company.
Right.
And anyone that knows him or has ever seen him talk knows that that man does not bullshit. So
no, he does not.
I remember so I got a couple lucky breaks. I'll be very honest with you. The first lucky break that I got is after a week of working at Uber, someone was like, you're going to run the TK meetings every week. And I was like, what is a TK meeting? Like, first of all, his name is Travis Kalanick. And the meeting that he runs every week is like the Uber Pool weekly business reviews. And so you basically have to be like, this is the entire business, all the metrics, how much money we made, how much money we lost, what's happening. And I was like, okay, cool. And then, so I was like, they're like, you probably should like train for like 4 weeks and like be in some of these. And then eventually you should take this over. And I'm like, I'll just take it over next week. Like a 23-year-old, 24-year-old, like, I'll just easily do this. And they're like, I remember my boss at the time, he was like, all right. And then I realized, like, it's so funny. There was no what I call work theater at Uber. So like I would go to a meeting and even if I was like 80% prepared, I remember being like, and so this happened. And he's like, why is Paris down? And I'm like, oh, this like thing happened and we like had to change surge in this way. And he stood up and he's like, what the fuck did you say? You changed surge? And I was like, do we change surge? I think that was just like a talking point on my slide. And he's like, shut the fuck up. Like, and I was like, oh shit, I got to take this stuff really seriously. Like, you know, this is like meaningful to the business.
Right.
And so I had so many of those times where like, have you ever felt dread of like you're at a new company and the guy who was just on Colbert last night is like, obviously this like digger at this company. And he's like, what the fuck did you just say? Like, never say that again. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I should probably like cross my T's and dot my I's before I say anything. And like, you know, that could have sweeping implications, like millions of dollars every minute type of implications if I say something wrong.
Right. Right.
So I learned through that process of like, I was thrown in the fire. Probably took me some years to, you know, get over it, but I love every second of it because I knew at that time that like I was chosen to do something that was growing and was going to be amazing. And I would say the prevailing feeling that I had when working at Uber was when I was young, I knew that I could thrive in this type of environment. I would watch these TV shows. I would kind of look up to these tech moguls, whatever. And when you're sitting at a big company, you're kind of sitting there being like, man, this thing sucks. It's so boring. I want to like tear it up and like do everything. Then there's a different type of like rush that you get when someone's like, yeah, by the way, this whole thing you now own. And you kind of get to this point of like, oh, this is like a lot bigger than I thought even I would give myself. And I definitely can't screw this up. And then you start yourself succeeding and the team succeeding. And you're like, whoa, this is like kind of the thing I talked shit about for a long time. And now I'm kind of doing it. So this is like kind of cool. I guess I can do it, you know, because at Microsoft, you're sitting there being like, I could definitely do that. And you never really know. And then at Uber, it was thrown into the fire. It was like, don't lose money, scale into China, scale it up, launch new cities. And I'm like 25 years old. I'm, you know, like what is going on? I have some hilarious stories where I'm the first licensed like Uber driver that worked at Uber in New York City. And that was one of the most like iconic meetings, I think, that I was a part of and like the team was a part of. It was like 8:30 p.m. on a Tuesday. And this gives you an idea of like how fun it was at the time. It was like 8:30 on a Tuesday. We're doing a business review for Uber. And I was talking about driver side improvements. I was like, yeah, they're like, there's a huge gap. We call it pickup location error, huge gap between pickup and like where the Ubers are. And I was like, oh, we got to like do all these things. And he's like, what do you know about driving in New York City? Like, do you know if this is a good distance or bad distance? And I was like, well, you know, we like talked to some people. He's like, no. You like didn't listen to what I said. What do you know about driving in New York City? And I was like, oh, this is going to be like one of those times. So I was like, yeah, like I'm a Canadian. I don't even have a U.S. license.
I didn't know that. I'm Canadian as well. I didn't actually know that about you.
No, it gets crazy.
You guys both have like a heavy Canadian accent. I can tell that.
But no, guys, and then it starts like amping up. So it's like 8:45, 9:15. And everyone's like, yeah, what does Ro know about these things? And then he's like, you know, I think you got to go to New York right now and like actually figure this out for the company, like build it properly. And I was like, right now? I'm like, oh, no, but like, I can't get an American license. I'm a Canadian. And also like New York's a licensed chauffeur market. I have to become a taxi driver and take an exam. And he's like, I see. And he's like, cool. And I was like, oh, I meant to say like, I'm Canadian and I don't have a license and I would have to become a taxi driver. And it would like take 3 weeks to like write this test where I've like memorized the map of New York City and like write it by hand. And also the week of training and stuff. And he's like, correct. And I remember being like, so like go now? And he's like right now. And like everyone on my team is like kind of like, what's going on? Got on the next plane, went enrolled in taxi school, literally did the written test of like memorizing the fastest way to get from like the Javits Center to like someplace in like Soho. I'm like living in San Francisco at the time.
That's awesome.
Go do a driving test, get my American license, then go write the taxi exams, get that. Yeah. Go rent a car, go on Uber. And then I started driving in New York and I come back. It was so funny. I come back and I'm like, yeah, driving in New York City as an Uber driver is extremely fucked up. All the stuff that I'm doing is wrong. And it's all just like spreadsheet math. And I remember, and then everyone at the company was like, yeah, we should probably go do this. And then we went and go did it. But it's a good example of like what I learned that experience. It's like, you could sit in an office and pretend to like use logic to solve some of these problems. But at Uber, it was like, get your hands dirty, go there, do the thing, and you're going to really solve the root issue. And at the time, that was like a crazy scenario of like, I was like, what is my life? I would like sit in LaGuardia Community College for a week with no phones, memorizing the map of New York City. I was like questioning everything in my life at that point.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't? And I'm like, this is like 15 minute lunch break. And I'm like, oh my God. And the guy's like, I just came from, you know, Mumbai. Like, what about you? I'm like, I'm a student. I go to Washington State. And they're like, cool. Why are you driving? And I was like, oh, I'm trying to make some money. And they're like, all right. I'm like in the class like 30 other people. But then you actually go solve the real problem. So that's ultimately what he helped me understand. Like, startups are way less clean. I guess they're saying like they're way messier.
Yes.
They're way harder than you
think. Yes.
No matter what you think you know, you probably don't know a lot of it. Like, you got to do the hardest, messiest, most annoying thing to truly find out how to fix it. And then you'll fix it for the world. And then after that, what I learned is, and then people will also not understand how much harder and how much messier it was. It's like, oh yeah, like now that you have the solution in retrospect, that's like fairly easy. And they're like, yeah, but you don't really understand how I got here. And I never would have got here if we were just like sitting in a conference room in San Francisco, you know, like going to Blue Bottle Coffee and talking about carpooling. Like, we never would have got the solution.
Well, I think that's like the same thing for me with my last company and also with AirHost as well. It's like, you really need to like get your hands dirty and like really like learn. So like with myself, it was like selling the first 50 customers myself, figuring out go to market motion, figuring out like how to actually onboard different 3PLs. And even though that I had experience like running 3PLs before, it's like startups are fucking messy. They are so messy. Everybody that thinks that they're going to join, like if you want to join Facebook or like a larger company like Microsoft or something like that, yeah, you're going to have a pretty easy job. But like as like you joining a startup, like I think that you're going to learn a lot more in a lot shorter of a amount of time. But also it's going to be fucking messy and it's going to be very uncomfortable. And that's what a lot of people do not understand.
Yeah, your story really resonated. You know, I joined Google out of college. So similar big company, good experience to learn what all the different roles do, but like you had to fight for, you know, your job. There were like 50 people doing the same job. And then I went to Twitter when it was, you know, still a startup in 2010. And like, it was a mess. It was growing fast.
It's just chaos, and like, right?
Chaos. And they would just throw things at me. And I was like, I don't think you should trust me. I'm not the person for this. And the same thing with like, you know, I remember one day, like Jack Dorsey was like, we're going to go acquire this company in New York. Get on a plane and go make sure they're good to acquire. And I was like, I mean, like now? He's like,
yeah, look, they find good. Good.
Like, I was like, sure. I don't know anything about acquiring companies, but like I flew to New York that day or that next morning. Like it was like the next flight I could get on. I also feel like there's something to be said for, you know, having that kind of experience when you're young and like when you can study 3 weeks for a license or get on. I would spend a week in New York, a week in San Francisco, back and forth for a year.
Right.
It was exhausting, but I could do it. Like I didn't have a family. I didn't have responsibility. And, you know, of course, I love parents and I think they're amazing employees and really productive, but I really encourage people when they are young and have less responsibility. You know, it's great to get that kind of experience where you're really thrown into the deep end. You can always do that stable office job later. But if you can, if you can find a fast growing startup or one where you can wear multiple hats and then you can really like dive in,
you learn so much.
You can't pay for that kind of education.
Oh my God, you definitely can't. You start realizing as well. I don't know if you guys feel this, but like there's also this like thing that some people are born with that I recognize almost right away where I'm like, you're going to thrive in our company. Like, you just have that thing that allows you to operate the way we need you to operate, which is like, it's almost like the same reason why you won't be successful at a big company. Like, at a big company, you have to placate a lot of people. So you don't really have polarizing leaders. You can't like rise to the top at a corporation being a polarizing leader. You have to be like this universally well-loved, like always right, working on like doing stuff. The polarized, like Travis or even me or like someone like us, like we wouldn't thrive at a Google. You think they'll promote people like me? They'll be like, this guy's crazy. I'm like, let's invent this and that. I'm like, and so when you're young and you have that like skill set, and I see it in people, it's the same thing that I say to them, which is like, maybe you shouldn't even work here. Like if you have the entrepreneurial spirit, like, I don't want to clip your wings. I think like there's so few of us in the world that have the ability to like thrive and have fun in this environment and then build something great for the world. I'm almost like, you should go do that because there's so few of us in the world, right? And so they're effective here, but I'm like, if you have an idea, I think like you should go do that. And it's
though I will say like working in a company gave me, like made me realize I could do it. Like, it is a more controlled environment, even when it's chaotic. And then to see other people like trust me to do things I didn't even think I could do, then I kind of gained a lot of confidence. And I was like, okay, I could do anything.
Or you realize, the funny part is like you realize that the decisions that the world like writes about in a news article, for example, it's just like a logical extreme, really did come from like an idea that took 20 minutes to like crystallize, and then you just decided to go with it. Like, so founders understand when that's the method. I mean, like, well, so what's the pricing strategy of the company? And I was like, well, it started with me being like, is 20 bucks a lot? Like, I don't know. And they're like, no. Like, you guys did like pricing exercise. I'm like, pricing exercise? Dude, this was like something we forgot about. And then at 11 p.m., they're like, what's the price? And I'm like, 20? They're like, 19. 1999? Yeah, 1999. Let's go with that. And I'm like, oh shit! Like the decisions that you make, and like how you make it at a small startup, these decisions won't kill the company ultimately. It's just like so funny to me to even talk to my friends who are still at big companies, being like, "There's no way you guys decided to pivot the company because of that." I'm like, "Oh yeah, yeah." We like woke up at like 10 a.m. one day. We were all just fed up, and we're like, "Fuck it, this shit ain't working." It's day 70.
Versus
it's
like
guys, tomorrow morning, a new thing. And I'm like,
versus like a big company that gets McKinsey involved and they have like, it's like a 3-month drawn out process as far as like
did you
all
document
that
it? I was like, we didn't document it. We just changed it tomorrow or yesterday. Really, really funny. But to add to that point, I think, I really do see people, it's kind of sad in that when you do stay at a big company for too long, there's a couple of things that I noticed. One of them is that these big companies are really good at running like disinformation campaigns to make people think that they're like in a startup environment inside of a big company and it's actually like, really risky and it's not. Yeah. So they come to startups and I like say, like, it really is that Mike Tyson quote, which is like, you think you have a plan until you get punched in the face. And so I've seen what real shock looks like. And it's like, I see it in their eyes. And I'm like, you have never dealt with this type of problem at this intensity, this quickly. And the scary part about it is I don't even register this as a problem. And so like, and you see them, they're like, like it's like indecision. And I'm like, cause like all of our jobs are on the line now if we get this one wrong. It's not like I might get in trouble or something. I'm like, that's the gravity of this decision. Now, there's a lot of decisions that we make every week. So don't worry, this won't be the only one that you make. But yes, we are really all hoping we get this one right. And I've seen many, many people coming from big companies get that first hurdle and they're not able to overcome it. And they're like, they're too stressed. They have to take days off. It's like, it really spirals. I'm like, oh, they really kind of made you like, they convinced you that you were taking at this
point. My husband spent 12 years at Google, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And then he took some time off to be a stay-at-home dad. And then I convinced him to come work for Winnie. But there was like, I mean, he'll say it himself, like there was definitely a learning curve. He was like, what? You just like do this stuff? But now, you know, I think 2 years in, he's like unlearned all the Google ways. But like it was like, and it was, you know, he's a product manager. So he would bring that like Google style and like engineers were like, what the F is going on?
Oh, my God.
I learned a lot of that because it's like that does not work here. We just do it.
It's funny. Like, I think I am, as also someone who was a PM at a big company, I do believe that the PM profession, like itself, is something that will be less and less valuable as time goes on in the way that it was previously kind of thought of. Mm. And I think no one talks about this enough, but like when I was, you know, 2012 going into like becoming a PM after studying engineering, classic path, is you kind of have to admit, like, I wasn't the best engineer. So like, it's like a, how do I get compensated like an engineer and still stay in tech, but then like, don't have to code. And that was like the introduction to PM. And then that ends up being a lot of like busy work, really, when you think about it, around like, you're not a designer, you're not an engineer. So like, I'm really hiring you to be a middleman between like figuring out what customers want. And then over time that becomes like, I just see more of these other parts of the business and like designers and engineers actually now taking an interest in that and then developing those skill sets very quickly.
We lost you.
And have you ever like seen someone?
Wait, lost the last thing you said.
Oh, what was the last thing I said? I've seen other parts of the company building that skill set very quickly. And I'm like, you want to see a dangerous startup operator? Have you ever seen a engineer that took in a liking to design and user research and can bang out a prototype?
I love those people so much.
And I'm like, oh my God, you're going to take over the entire world. Like, this is crazy, right? Like,
they're the next founders.
Yeah. And what I realized is like, oh, it's all about how good you are at the adjacent part of your business. So, that's when I start seeing that people are dangerous, which is like, you take an engineer that has a liking to design. You take a design person who has a liking to engineering. You know, you take a engineer who has a liking to user research. All those things, if you just do the adjacent thing really well, start learning those skill sets,
right?
All of a sudden, it becomes like a 10x multiplier for any startup. Like, I'll take that person all day versus a user researcher.
For sure.
An engineer who loves talking to customers and they can quickly prototype something, at least in my world, is extremely valuable compared to a user researcher who does a research study once every 3 weeks. Like,
so,
you know,
we got a couple more minutes here. Ro, you're obviously connected to the Silicon Valley scene, and you're friends with Travis. Do you have any like anecdotal stories that like people can like grasp onto that may not be in the Showtime series or something like that?
Oh my God. Okay. Well, from Uber or just broadly? I have a couple of
whatever.
Okay. I think, you want to hear a crazy one?
Yes.
Which is,
yes.
Oh my God. Well, I've never said this one. I think one of the crazy experiences at Pietra was, we were starting and at some point, I found myself making a deck to pitch Kanye West, which is like crazy to me.
Oh, God.
The way that unfolded.
Kanye West?
Yeah, who's that guy? Yeah, I guess Ye now. And he had like a jewelry line, and Pietra started as like, you know, supporting jewelry designers and building infrastructure. And the way that went down was like, I spent so much time on this deck. I get a first class ticket to go to LA for a lunch and then right back, and I'm in New York. So it's like, oh my God. And I was like, something is happening here. This is like crazy. And this is really funny how like it all, my co-founder was there, and another investor who I love dearly named Anthony Schiller, who was like, you know, the person who set it all up. And so I go there, we go to the table. I'm obviously 50 minutes early, show up at the meeting spot. The waitress people like set us down. And so we're just waiting there like this. And my co-founder had Allbirds on. And I was like, Allbirds are Yeezy knockoffs. Like, take them off immediately. So he took off his shoes, stashed them outside the Beverly Hills Hotel in the garden. And then I made him put on my boots to be like, let's not piss this guy off. I don't know what's going to happen here. And he's like, we're literally doing this. I'm like, yes, these shoes are two sizes too big, but you got to wear them for the meeting and like make sure. We're like, okay. Yeah, it's really, really funny. And then, and there's a punchline to this, but so he comes in, drives in with a red Lambo, doesn't even park in a parking spot, opens the suicide doors, gets out, looks at the table we're sitting at, and then points at another table, and they fashion another table in a different part of the restaurant because, I don't know, the sun was shining in that direction. So I'm like, all right, Pan, like, don't trip because these shoes are too big. We gotta walk over to the thing.
Oh my God.
And this is what young founders should know. Like, this is a very interesting kind of learning for me, which is we sit down, he's on his phone, and I like start talking, but he's like ignoring me. And then
Kanye.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, oh, we have this company, we want you to like, do the thing. And he's like on his phone. I'm like, is this, what is going on here? This is like a Twilight like experience right now. And then he looks up and goes, what percentage of your company will I own if I do any of the stuff you're talking about? And that was the first time I realized like, oh, these people also think about business in like a different way. It's not a cool thing. It's like, and that was my first learning of, you know, the classic Silicon Valley. I have a celebrity that wants to promote your brand. Let me invest. You can have a meeting with me. And all these young founders, myself included, was like, whoa. And then you realize like these people are, you got to think very deeply as a founder, like, will they actually help your company? They're very expensive. They also just don't care about your company a lot of the time.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I feel like we should do a whole episode on celebrity investors.
Yes.
They are.
Yes. We should.
They can spin up founders and it can be a ton of work. And then you realize you're getting a really horrible deal for very, very little. And well, everyone will pitch you differently on like all the value add, but it's shit.
Well, the funny part is like, so that meeting happened and I flew right back to New York and I was like, I don't know. Like, we kind of talked about nothing and like, obviously like so outlandish and is it like requests, which is fine. And then a week later, I'm like, I get a message being like, this person no longer uses electronics for the foreseeable future. So we'll like let you know what happens. And I was like, imagine being in business with someone who's like, they're not using electronics for the foreseeable future. Like, what does that mean?
Well, he's also, got major issues. So that's particularly bad celebrity. You dodged a bullet there. All right, we're out of time.
We're out of time. So we're going to wrap this up and set up. Thank you so much, Ro, for joining us. For everybody listening, please subscribe do whatever on your podcasting channel.
This is like such good promo.
Kevin's getting fired. This is horrible.
Hey, I have a business to run. Literally,
right, exactly.
Like, I have a business to run. I do this 1 hour a week. Okay, so thank you so much, Ro, for coming on. This has been an awesome episode. Everybody go build brands with Ro, and we will all see you next time.
Bye. Thanks, guys.